This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games, or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Street Easy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let Street Easy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. Street Easy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast.
You know, on any given day with any given show, I have a lot of material that I don't get to. And man, I tell you what, I almost buried something really, really big today. Sue, have you heard Gavin Newsom do a complete flippy floppy here on the trans sports issue?
What?
Okay, apparently this is real.
Like, you right now should come out and be like, you know what? The young man who's about to win the state championship in the long jump in female sports,
right.
That shouldn't happen. You as right. the governor should step out say no.
No, and I appreciate
But like, would you do something like that? Would you say no men in female sports?
Well, I think it's an issue of fairness. I completely agree with you on that.
What?
So that's easy to call out, the unfairness of that.
Wait.
I'm sorry, what?
Okay, this is with Charlie Kirk. That's the same guy, Gavin Newsom, we've heard for all these years.
And so the issue of fairness is completely legit. And I saw that the last couple of years. Boy, did I saw how you guys were able to weaponize that issue level.
Not weaponize.
Weaponize may be pejorative. You're right. But you were able to
shine a light on?
Highlight it.
No, he's not running for president or anything like that. Michelle Tafoya is back with us this afternoon, the host of the Michelle Tafoya podcast. That was rather fascinating, wasn't it?
Yeah, but I also noted he was very non-committal, and because Charlie Kirk asked him, would you do that? Would you step out and say, and all he did was say, I agree with you that it's unfair.
Right,
I agree with
right.
you that it's unfair. But he did not commit to doing anything about it. So that was a really easy answer to give. But you're right. He's running for president. He understands this is an 80-20, at least 80-20 issue. And so he's taking the easy side of this issue, which it's amazing that more Democrats won't do that.
It really is. And, you know, look, he's slick and he is a wily politician. So it does not, you know, it does. Yeah, exactly. It's that puky emoji.
It makes me kind of nauseous.
It's like the emoji we have on our iPhones with the green puke coming out, right? That's kind of how I feel about Gavin Newsom, although he does have nice hair. But let's talk about this issue relating to, you know, the executive order and what happened at the speech the other night, because all these Democrats who in the Senate, not one of them, not even John Fetterman, Michelle, voted to protect women in sports. Here's Riley Gaines.
To see the theatrics, the performative, that's what it is. It's performance that we saw from them. Wearing all the pink to symbolize standing with women. Again, this party, the Democratic Party, could not be further from being pro-woman. They are anti-woman and they are anti-reality.
Now, I would expect, Michelle, that there are, you know, members of the Senate, maybe even from your state, Minnesota, that are a little bit more progressive, that would never, you know, dare to cross over like Gavin Newsom just did. But there are other members that aren't seemingly crazy, but not one of them stood up to do the right thing the other day.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned Minnesota, too. I mean, both our senators are women, Amy Klobuchar and Tina Smith, and neither one of them voted for this. And also, the same day, there was a resolution in the Minnesota state legislature that they could not get a single Democrat, and they only won to pass this thing, They couldn't get a single Democrat in the House of Minnesota to vote to protect girls and women's sports. I mean, it's about safety and it's about fairness, period, the end. There's a reason we have two divisions. We've talked about this ad nauseum. Yeah. People know. But I think that was both of those votes, the one here in Minnesota and the one in the United States Senate, happened the night before Trump was going to speak. They did not want to hand him a victory. I'm convinced of that. And so there was massive coordination among Democrats, and Democrats stick together, which also tells you something, right? It tells you that they're more concerned about their party than they are about their own constituents. Because if they really listened to their own constituents in the cities and states they represent, they'd vote the way those constituents want them to. But they didn't. This was about politics and party.
Yeah, and to your point, the same thing is true on the border right now. I mean, these mayors go up there yesterday. I just played some awesome audio from Tom Homan, who was on with Laura Ingraham last night. But they go up there, and they're trying to make the case that deporting violent migrants is making their cities, like Brandon Johnson says, that's making my welcoming city. That's the other thing, the language, Michelle. You've noticed the difference, right? It's not sanctuary. It's welcoming city. That's making my welcoming city more dangerous. Are you kidding me? Have you read the news in your city and what happens on a weekend basis, in a weekly basis?
One of the unfortunate things about big cities, especially like Chicago, here in Minneapolis as well, I would say Los Angeles, although they're starting to open their eyes in LA, is that the real stakeholders are the people who work in those big cities that have businesses there and, you know, travel in to work. But generally, that massive number of people that travels into the city to work, to vacation, to eat dinner, whatever they're doing, they live outside of the voting area. So the voters within that actually live in the city proper are fewer in number. And for some reason, they are continuing to accept these horrible candidates. I mean, absolutely horrible. Brandon Johnson was a terrible candidate. They had a better alternative. They wouldn't go that direction. I don't know what it's going to take to break those voting habits. But you're right. There's the language aspect. Oh, we're a welcoming city, not a sanctuary city. And it's making us less safe and people are scared. Well, you know what? I can tell you about a bunch of people who are scared or who were scared as they were on the brink of losing their lives to some of these illegals.
Let me offer you from St. Louis a little hope. And I believe that this should be a national story, and maybe eventually it will be. But, you know, we had a situation with this prosecutor that became very well-known, Kim Gardner, who was not doing her job. 60 Minutes came in here, gives a big, wet, sloppy kiss to her, acts like St. Louis is just racist for having any kind of criticism of someone who really was not legitimately prosecuting criminals. And it was unbelievable. So we get rid of her. We have an African-American mayor, Michelle Deshara Jones, first term mayor. She comes in, you know, 4 years ago. She just finished a distant second in an election primary, and she did make it to the runoff. So in 3 weeks and 4 weeks, I guess it'd be 3 weeks from this Tuesday, she's going to square off with a member of the Board of Aldermen that is not exactly a conservative, as you might imagine. But this one term BLM supporting, you know, nonsense mayor who's not paid any attention to city services like trash and snow removal, she's going to get booted out here in St. Louis, and the voters are going to make a change, Michelle Tafoya. So that's encouraging.
That is encouraging. I hope it continues. It's hard to imagine how any American can look at the lack of true concern and care for actual issues that these Democrats have and continue to vote for them. I mean, we saw it with that speech the other night before the joint session. It was unserious from the side of Democrats. Trump said it perfectly. I cannot say or do anything that's going to make the Democrats happy. And so rather than look for ways to, make progress, and I don't mean in the progressive sense, but solve problems and come up with solutions and actually create things, all they do is this resistance, these theatrics. They look silly. They look foolish. And as far as I'm concerned, keep it going, because I'd like to see more Republicans win office. The people that are actually willing to take on the tough problems and find the solutions that aren't always easy, but they've got to be made.
So what would you say right now? Michelle Tafoya is back with us, the host of the Michelle Tafoya podcast, with Doge overall. You know, we've got situations, and one of the things I think some people might be bracing for, and I just predict this comfortably, there are going to be some people that are going to realize that maybe they have a family member, a friend, or maybe even a situation here in St. Louis that they may be affected. And there's federal workers that might be sacrificed that shouldn't be, and maybe those corrections will be made. But there doesn't seem to be any attempt on the other side, once again, to look at the benefits of, you know, pulling back on some of this spending, the benefits of, you know, addressing fraud, waste, and abuse and things like that. It's amazing to me that they're carrying with that narrative. Fetterman's been the outlier there saying, yeah, who would be opposed to this stuff? But they seemingly just want to go against Elon Musk and call him President Musk. They don't care about the spending, Michelle.
No, they don't, really. Honestly, if they did, they'd be looking for ways to contribute, like I said, but they don't. And so they're vilifying this guy. Look, Trump is going to be a one-term president here, or, you know, at the end of this term, he's done. And so they can't really attack him. He's a man on a mission. He doesn't have to worry about getting reelected. So they're attacking Elon. That's the first part. The second part is, when did it become that a federal job was untouchable? Like, somehow,
right,
federal workers are so special and so important that no matter how many of them we keep hiring, we can't fire them. It's like teachers. You know, even if they're a terrible teacher, if they have tenure, they keep getting paid. This is silly. We're seeing ABC News lay people off. We saw Meta cut 4,000 workers. People like to look at this as, oh, this is evil, this is horrible, people are losing their jobs. Yeah, well, you know what? If they're not doing a good job, or their job is, you know, it's duplicated somewhere else and we can get by with fewer, it would be malfeasance not to get rid of those jobs. Like, it's your money, people. Look at your pay stub. If you got billed for all of these workers, if we enumerated for you on a piece of paper everything you're paying for, where your taxes are going, and then said, hey, thanks, can you pay this bill now? Because we think it's important to have, you know, trans musicals in Peru or whatever it is. I'm being facetious, but it's certainly out there. If you had all that highlighted for you, would you really want to pay your tax bill? Well, so, and if you find out that there are five federal workers for really every one that is necessary, would you want to keep paying for that? Of course you wouldn't.
It's outrageous. And the majority of the country is with them. That's why, you know, yesterday was amazing. Yeah. I hear all these pundits about, you know, the speech. The speech is too long. Jimmy Kimmel goes on and does blah, blah, blah last night. But then you look at the polling, the people who actually watch the speech, 36 million people, and they're on Trump's side on so many of these issues. Now, let me ask you about, because obviously there's uncomfortability with a lot of people, maybe even on the right, on the Ukraine situation. What I saw last week, I loved. And I didn't love it because I don't want the U.S. to, you know, play some sort of role in forcing Putin in the situation with Ukraine. But again, it's an issue of resources. And we're pouring a lot of money into something that's not working. I don't believe that this war is winnable, Michelle. I don't know that you do. So why would you continue to pour money down something that doesn't have a chance to win?
Yeah, that's the calculation that people need to make. And it, you know, Biden and Kamala just kept saying, we're with you for as long as it takes. What does that mean, really? 5 years? 10 years? 50 years? Because the way they were going, they weren't helping enough to totally overcome. They wanted to avoid World War III, obviously. So they didn't want to get involved militarily. So we're just going to keep dumping money to you in a losing effort? No, if you want peace, there's someone there that can broker the peace. Was that an uncomfortable moment in the Oval? Yeah, but I would say it was uncomfortable for two reasons. One, you saw the president and Marco Rubio and J.D. Vance getting irritated with this guy. And two, this guy was acting like he deserved and was entitled to everything America can offer. And so I think it was really, I think people were really split, but the more they really looked at it and the more that they saw that what's trying to happen, you know, it's from the art of war. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. So people like to say Trump is cozying up to Putin and giving in to Putin. I would say quite the contrary. I would say he's keeping his enemies closer and he's trying to get a situation where peace can return. And so if you're not going to win this war, Zelensky, then you need to find a way to peace. And that's going to require some give and take.
Michelle, what is hot on the podcast? I see you have Jay Johnson. He's an actor. I think a lot of people might know his name, not know his name, or you know, maybe even his face, but he's been a big character on Bob's Burgers. I think he was in, yep, you know, Mr. Show back in the day as well.
Yep, he was. He was in Anchorman, and he hasn't worked in Hollywood since January 6, 2021, because he happened to be at the Capitol.
Oh, my.
And when you hear his story about what he's been through, and that, and every back that's turned on him because he was there. He wasn't wearing horns. He wasn't sitting in the speaker's chair. He was barely inside the building at all. And his life has been ruined. And look, I was agnostic at one point on January 6th. I was like, it was a thing. It happened. I don't know. But I've talked to enough people now. Siaka Massaqua is another one. He's another actor who happened to be there. And what they've been through for really not doing anything is revealing. And people should listen to their stories, too. We got really one side of the story when that committee put up their little television production. It's important to listen to these other people.
I believe that. And look, I was outraged by what happened, what I saw on January 6th, and I remain outraged. But I also know, and Julie Kelly's been really good at highlighting some of this stuff, there were over-prosecutions, and there,
yes,
were people that were treated unfairly. I don't know Jay's story at all, so that's fascinating. And that's the latest episode of the podcast, right?
Yeah, that one dropped today. Every Wednesday, we have what we call Wild Card Wednesday, and this week was a lot of fun because we took that speech from the joint session, and we broke it down and gave you the highlights, reacted to the highlights, and we threw in a bunch of other stuff, too. We like to go through tons and tons of clips and then bring it down to a manageable number and show you the highlights from the week, or at least from the – now it's no longer about a week. It's about like the last 2 hours, because news breaks at breakneck speed. So the minute you think you have a great clip to show everyone, something bigger and more interesting has happened.
Well,
but
we do that
every Wednesday. It's a lot of fun.
Nothing against the podcast world, because I understand that I'm old media. But that is one advantage, you know, to live radio these days, because to,
yes,
your point, things do happen so damn fast. You know, I opened the,
yep,
show today, and we look up, we got this guy, I'm sure you've seen Will Scharf signing the executive orders. He's a Missouri guy. He ran for attorney general here, so we know Will. And I look up at the screen as, you know, the clock turns to the start of my show, and I just dip into the questions, because you just never know what you're going to get with Trump. So we take the Q&As a lot of times live, because they're pretty good.
They are. I mean, that's one thing. This president is pretty entertaining. He's so transparent. He's going to just be straight with you. Even when he gives a non-answer, it's entertaining. But, you know, he is people who thought at one time, if ever they think this guy's stupid, they don't get it. He is wily. He is clever. He is smart. He is savvy, and more than anything, he has a spine like no politician I've,
yeah,
ever seen.
Well, that
and
we
that's
know.
What this country,
yeah,
needs.
That,
yeah,
we know to be true for sure. Michelle Tafoya, yeah, always great to have you on. I'm going to check out that latest edition with Jay in the podcast. I did not know the backstory, so that sounds fascinating.
Yeah, I hope you do. Thanks so much for having me.
We'll talk to you soon. Thank you. Michelle Tafoya, check out the Michelle Tafoya podcast. We're coming back with Gene Evans. We'll talk about getting rid of the Department of Education. Will that happen?
Ugh, your clothes are too tight, yet you can't lose weight, even though you've tried so many diets. The reason you're having trouble losing weight could be a liver clogged with fat, and that is slowing your metabolism. Introducing Omicid, a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight, and it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Find out more and see the university studies at omicid.com. That's AlmaSed.com.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We had Brian on a little earlier in the 3 o'clock hour. You can always use the Odyssey Rewind app to check out that conversation. We are 2 weeks away from his show at the Factory. Some tickets still available, some VIP experiences still available at briankilmeade.com. So there were some rumors that were going around that the Department of Education was going to be killed today by an executive order. That did not happen. But here's Linda McMahon, who is the new education. Well, she's the educator. They don't call her the czar. What the hell do they call her? Whatever they call her, here she is.
But since then, we had COVID, and Americans' eyes were open to just what an abject failure this federal agency has been at its mission. Shy of Congress actually dismantling and shutting down the department, one of the most important ways to get power back to a more local level is to simply take the funds appropriated by Congress and block grant them back to the states.
Secretary of Education. That's what everyone was yelling at the radio. Mark, you idiot! It's Secretary of Education. Yes, I, for whatever reason, was having trouble landing on that. Gene Evans is with us, political consultant for Go Consulting, former executive director of the Missouri GOP, former state rep, and the head of the Missouri Federation for Children. She's going to be with us tomorrow on the Reardon Roundtable at our Fish Fry. Hi, Gene. How are you?
I'm great. And I am so excited that Linda McMahon is the new Secretary of Education, because I think she has got the right ideas about moving the money back into the hands of families and states when it comes to educating children.
Do you think that this is logistically realistic? It looks like something that might be tried. I've been around, you know, scenarios where people have mentioned this for a long time. And then, of course, when you say you want to get rid of the Department of Education, people who don't really understand the complexity of the issue would say, whoa, that sounds terrible. Why would you want to hurt education, right? But there's a good reason, because the resources are being wasted.
Right, right. So this department came about when we were still in school, Mark, and I would argue that no child education has improved. The outcomes have not gotten better. Billions of dollars have gone into this bureaucracy, and what President Trump and Linda McMahon are saying, let's put that money back closer to the source. Let's put it back to parents. There's actually something called the Educational Choice for Children Act that's moving through Congress now, which is a universal school choice program that any American can take advantage of, and then block granting money back to the states. And if you talk to superintendents, they'll tell you the federal money has so many strings attached that it's almost not worth it. There's not that much of a benefit to what they do. It's a lot of bureaucracy with really no good results. Now, I think it was created with good intentions, but it hasn't worked. And some of the programs that come out of there, people say, well, what's going to happen to this? Like the IDEA Act and some of the other things that have to do with kids with special needs. Those will just be moved back to where they were before this department was created. And so they're really, it's not going to impact parents in a negative way with some of those programs, but it will impact in a positive way for parents who would like to see better outcomes for their kids.
So to your point, Gene, it was October of 1979 when it was right around the time I was moving here to St. Louis. We moved here in November of 1979 from Chicago. But that's when the Department of Education was established. And the rumors started circulating because this is an executive order that's been in the works for a while here. The Wall Street Journal and others did some reporting on this last night. And apparently the draft says the experiment of controlling American education through federal programs and dollars and the unaccountable bureaucrats those programs and dollars support has failed our children, our teachers, and our families. The draft viewed by the journal was labeled as pre-decisional, suggesting it could change. So I don't know if you know what happened today, if they're just kind of putting some finishing touches. Obviously, the core challenges will be there right away. But are you hopeful that something like this actually could happen? It's like, if we're talking in a year, is the Department of Education being dismantled?
Well, regardless of where it's, whether it still exists or not, it's going to be downsized if it still exists. And they're moving in the right direction. I've read that it takes an actually get rid of the department.
Yeah, they would have to, and they would have to have a filibuster-proof 60-vote majority there. And I don't know how to get that right.
But that doesn't mean that they can't downsize and, you know, make these programs more accessible to families and get rid of some of the bloat. You may remember, like, these talking heads at the Department of Education were the ones who were, you know, shutting down the schools and saying kids playing football had to wear masks and all kinds of other crazy stuff. So they have not done any. Look at all the COVID money they spent.
Oh my gosh.
We have seen no results from that. And if you put that back, you know, just think about the city of St. Louis, Mark. I mean, I've lived here my whole life. City schools have not gotten better. If anything, they've gotten worse. Wouldn't it be great if these parents had an opportunity to get a scholarship to go to a school that they better fit their kid, whether it was a private school or a different district, because you could use that money for any of those things. And we're seeing this growth of homeschooling, and it's because people are fed up with the schools. They think they can do a better job than the schools can. So their tax dollars that are going to pay for schools are not actually, their kids aren't getting educated there. You know, they're doing it at home.
This is one of those situations. Look, I love the way that the Wall Street Journal, who report on this, they closed the article this way. With around 4,500 employees as of last year, the department is the smallest cabinet-level agency, which is interesting. And then they say, polls show most Americans are skeptical of eliminating the department, and Democrats have rallied in opposition to the idea. Well, of course they're skeptical, because when you hear, it's just sort of like what's happening with DEI. If you're a simple person and you don't have an understanding of the evil that DEI really is, then you're going to say, oh, that sounds bad because we're just trying to make things more inclusive and diverse, etc. Same thing with this. People don't really think through it. They hear, oh, Trump wants to kill and Republicans want to kill the Department of Education. That's going to harm our kids, when the opposite is true. So really, this is about educating the voters as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, it sounds terrible. And most people aren't paying that close of attention to this. But people weren't paying that much attention to education, actually, until COVID. And then they started to wake up and see what was happening. And, you know, it's been especially impactful in poorer areas. They've fallen behind. Those schools and those school districts, those students are falling even farther behind than they were. That's just a catastrophe. If you've got kids, we've seen in the news recently where kids are graduating from high school that can't read.
Yes. Gene, let me stop you there, because I have highlighted a couple of stories. I even saw another one last week that was being reported on a TV station, maybe it was Boston or something like that, where there's lawsuits because these kids have gotten to the point where they graduate and they literally can't read, which is stunning.
It is stunning, and it's ridiculous, and something has to be done. So I think they're moving in the right direction. Whether it means the department is gone or it's just completely revamped to something that works better for families and more kids learn to read and write and do math, I just think they're moving in the right direction. And if they could pass this national school choice, for just think what that would mean for so many families who they're sending their kids to school and they're not learning to read. They're not learning how to do math. They're being indoctrinated with values that don't match the families. This would be a game changer for so many families and a way out of poverty for poor families if they had a chance to go to a school where their kids could actually learn.
So listen to the details. And I know that you know some of these stories, but I just saw this one the other day, and it's from Hartford, Connecticut. So there's a student there that's suing the Hartford Board of Education. And there's other cases like this, and the city of Hartford for negligence. This woman is Alicia Ortiz. She's 19 years old. She graduated from school with honors, high school. She earned a scholarship, but she cannot read or write. She's actually going to UConn in Hartford, and she's a freshman. And she says that what happened was, is she was going along and she did the same thing happened. Sue, remember I talked about this other story. She was having AI do some
That's
of the
right.
essays and the speeches and stuff like that. She says that she graduated last year, but she's illiterate and still does not know how to read or write. How can you be a freshman at a major university and not know how to read or write? And this is apparently not isolated.
No, well, if you talk to universities, they will tell you that the students coming in are so poorly educated and they're having to take all these remedial classes, which, guess what, adds up to the amount of money you got to pay, adds up to your student, more student loans. It's just a really an endless cycle of kids just trying to get back to, you know, where they're level, and it's costing them money and time, and they can't read or write. You cannot function in the society if you cannot read. You can't. I mean, how do you even get a driver's license, right? Like, it's ridiculous. But I do think, I mean, it's going to take a while, Mark. This is not, there's no easy fix. They
don't dismantle
the department and all of a sudden everybody knows how to read. But, you know, we're moving in the right direction, and they're moving so quickly, but we have to. There are so many kids and families who are just waiting for an opportunity to get out of the cycle of poverty that they're in. And it starts with an education.
Well, I'm totally supportive. I hope they're, because look, I've said this for the last couple of years. These stories that come out, maybe I'm more sensitive to it, Gene, because I have a little girl who's going to turn 10 tomorrow. She turns 10 years old, I'm sorry, on Saturday. She'll be at our fish fry. But because of that, you know, I do pay attention to what's happening in school. And every time I see these stories about how these kids are behind, and by the way, the kids are behind in the good school districts, right?
Right.
They're further behind in St. Louis Public Schools or Los Angeles Unified Schools. So it's even worse in those situations. And there doesn't seem to be anyone that's moving that in the right direction. In fact, let's use our own school district here in St. Louis, where the superintendent saw it fit to take $17 million in a surplus and turn it into $33 million deficit by traveling all over the country and hiring people for DEI causes. That's how the students in St. Louis were treated.
Well, think about this. If, you know, Governor Kehoe, who got his, you know, his first big initiative on crime through the Senate last night, his second thing he's been talking about is education and school choice. Think of what a difference that would make for the city of St. Louis. If you could feel safe living there and you had an opportunity to send your kid to any school, people might actually want to live in St. Louis. We might actually see, you know, a more thriving opportunity in St. Louis if the governor continues to have these wins and we, you know, solve the crime problem and let people go to school at a school that serves them, or introduce some competition, because without any competition, the public St. Louis public schools are just not going to get better.
Oh, you're right about that. Hey, we'll see you on the roundtable tomorrow at the Fish Fry, but this will be one of the questions that comes up. How would you say everything's going with the session right now? You mentioned the crime bill. That looks very good. It looks like local control is coming back to St. Louis and the police department.
It's going through, I think it's going really well. I mean, they're almost passing too many bills. People are like, wow, there's been like a pent-up demand. But they are, people are seeming to get along better, and so there's more, you know, unity, so to speak, and so they're moving forward with the agenda. The other thing, again, when, you know, you have a governor who's walking the halls and talking to people you know, saying, it really does help, Mark. I mean, Kehoe was all over the building this week talking to people. And, you know, when the governor comes in and sits down with you and explains why he would like you to support his bill, it's hard to say no, especially to him.
Well, look, I had Andrew Bailey on earlier, and, you know, I had a chance to sit down with him in his office a couple of weeks ago. And, you know, with no disrespect to Governor Parson, Governor Parson was the guy that appointed him. He even admitted that this new governor is so engaged on these issues. In fact, the meeting that I had with Andrew, and I met with Mike that morning, he was heading over across the street to the Capitol to talk to Governor Kehoe about a variety of these issues. So that's important, because there's a lot of teamwork going on right now.
Oh, absolutely. And Andrew Bailey is another one. I mean, that guy's a superstar. You know, like, he is really, he really wants to do the job. It's not just, hey, look at me, I'm Attorney General. He's a guy who's in the, you know, in the weeds doing the hard work. And all these guys are also really well-liked and respected by the legislature, and that's important. If you don't like the governor, you're not as likely to go along with some of his ideas. But they're both well-liked. We got a great team down there. I'm super excited. It's the best year I've had down there. This is my ninth year. It's the best year so far that I've ever experienced in Jeff City.
Well, let's not get along too well, though. I mean, because that does not serve a talk show host very well. We need some, you know, fights about some things as well.
Well, we'll have some tomorrow. Well, I'm saving some juicy stuff for tomorrow.
Good. Well, we'll see you on the roundtable. Thank you, Jean.
It sounds great. Thank you.
All right, take care. That's Jean Evans. She will be on the panel tomorrow along with State Rep Steve Butts and Jane Duker. We are going to be at Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church tomorrow afternoon starting at 3 o'clock doing the show. Come on out and have some great food. Sue is checking out the menu, and it looks delicious. Yeah, it is interesting to have, you know, and I'll be very curious to see how some of the stuff is managed with our local media moving forward. Because even on the issue of the Department of Education, I wonder if there's going to be an effort on the part of the legacy media to actually take any time in these stories to say, hey, maybe there's something to this. Maybe we should have a discussion about where this money goes to, how the money's spent. But to dismiss it completely out of hand, I think is not
short-sighted.
Especially right now, it is short-sighted, because why not take a stab at changing some of these things? And again, in order to dismantle the whole thing, you'd have to have Congress involved, and it doesn't look like that would happen, but maybe you can get a couple of people over. I'm still a little surprised. You know, Joe Manchin did an interview today, and he left the Senate, but he's the guy kind of calling out his party. He was one of the only guys that was doing that when he was in the Senate.
It was so sad. I kept thinking, and I was watching the delivery. I had sat there before in that same situation when the president first came, Trump. President Trump came, and he was speaking about energy and things about coal and things I know about the energy security we need for our country. And I was standing up, and I think people were hissing me behind, and I was the only one standing. I kept thinking, that's awful. They shouldn't be that disrespectful to the president. They were hissing me, not him.
Yeah, so that's interesting. Joe Manchin was always a guy who was along the lines of John Fetterman. He was saying there were rumors that he was going to flip to being a Republican, but he sent a message to his party now.
They have to understand, the people have spoken. They elect Donald Trump as president. Every red-blooded American should want your president to succeed. If you're in a position of being a House member or a Senate member and you can do something positive, do it. Don't worry about the politics. It'll take care of itself. Make sure our country succeeds and your leader has to succeed. And when you're going to be against something, do it respectfully. Do it with decorum. Not able to stand up and be able to clap on something with a human touch that young man, a young boy, yeah. what he wants to do. That's just unconscionable. Well,
yeah, he's talking about DJ Daniel, who very well might be featured in our audio cut of the day. But look, Manchin is giving him tough medicine. They're just not listening to it. I mean, they're too crazy on their side. They put this video out today about fighting with AOC, and I swear to God, one of them looks like Wesley Bell, but it's a woman. But he's saying you got to admit some mistakes.
And you can't make wrong right. You can try all you want to. Just say you made a mistake on the border. I was preaching from day one. Are you all crazy? Have you opened up basically with asylum at the border? What's your reasoning for doing this? So we made a mistake. I don't know why they made their determination to do that, the previous administration. And they should be able to live up to that. And so we made it. We'll fix it. President Trump is who he is. He came in and told you what he was going to do.
That's right. Interesting. Some tough medicine for the Democrats from a Democrat that they don't really consider crazy enough anymore, so they won't listen to him. Audio cut of the day coming up next. You know, no sooner do we take a break and I see this story from Neetu Arnold, who was a guest on my show last week at the Manhattan Institute. And here's the headline. It's a study that they did. Chronic absenteeism is hampering school improvement efforts in New York City. And I've seen a lot of coverage, Sue, of this in the LA Times as well. There's very little coverage of that here in St. Louis, but you can't tell me that SLPS doesn't have chronic absenteeism, right? And, you know, this is the Manhattan Institute saying there's a strong relationship between student attendance and success at school. Well, yeah, you think so, but this has really gotten bad post-COVID in these urban areas. What the hell are we doing? Why aren't we talking about this?
I don't know.
We should be, because this is a crisis. And you're talking, you want to see more kids that can't contribute to society, that can't read or write,
oof,
that are going to be just on the government dole, when the government dole might not be as full as it used to be. That is a problem for society, and it's not an easy one to solve, but it needs some attention for sure.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
You know, we have decisions to make on the show, and this little 13-year-old kid who has had brain cancer, had a lot of surgeries, he blew up at the speech the other night, DJ Daniel. Now, there's been a lot of Democrats that haven't said nice things about President Trump. DJ Daniel, who was just made a Secret Service agent, has something to say about that.
Our last thing, because we know you got to bounce. What would your one piece of advice for the Secret Service be?
Please stop being mean to President Trump, because if I see you being mean to him, I'm coming after you.
I love that. I think you need to become the director of the Secret Service. DJ, it is such an honor to have met you.
Hold up, I got one more thing to say.
What? He has one more thing to say.
Here
I won't interrupt you.
Here we go.
If you're a Democrat and you're being mean to President Trump, I'm on your bumper.
On your bumper is slang, Sue. I had to educate
myself. Well, yes,
it
is.
On your bumper. Do you know what it means?
You told me earlier, but yeah. I managed to forget.
On your bumper is a West Coast term described as someone aggressively pursuing someone for either confrontation or death's owed. It sounds like DJ Daniel is pretty serious about being on your bumper. Here's another appearance. He's a star.
Yeah, you think your friends are going to be jealous?
Pretty much. And I'm pretty sure my girlfriend going to be jealous. Because she ain't going to be... I say, you can't... I'm going to be like, you're going to have to hit the road, Jax. Because I'm a Secret Service now. I'm not... And if you touch me, you going to juvenile straight. And I ain't got to ask your parents for nothing. I'm sending you straight to jail.
You know, DJ, when you get older, you'll learn that women have an interesting way of dealing with those situations. A lesson for another time, young man. It was good talking to you. Thank you.
Yeah, DJ, settle down there just a little bit, especially on the girlfriend talk. You're going to get yourself in trouble. We're going to hope that some of that was said tongue-in-cheek and with a little humor in mind. We're going to wrap up a Thursday show, and we invite you to come out and see us. Maybe do a little... you know, heckling of Jane Duker on the roundtable tomorrow at Holy Trinity Serbian Orthodox Church. Jane will be on the panel. These are always fun events for me because, and I'm not even joking about this, people want to come out. They want to meet Jane. They want to meet Sue and Fred.
And Fred.
They
and
don't really
you.
Want to meet me. I don't really want to meet anyone because I'm not very personable, but I'd love for you to meet the supporting cast. We're a little disappointing because, disappointed rather, because Ethan has to be here running things at the station. We're going to get him to one of them, though.
We'll figure that out.
For sure. So tomorrow is Holy Trinity. Next week in Cottleville, Assumption in South County on the 21st, Queen of All Saints also in South County on the 28th, Mary Magdalene, St. Mary Magdalene in Brentwood on the 4th, and then we close things out in Millsot, Illinois on the 11th of April, which is kind of weird that Easter is, so I think Easter is the following weekend, right?
I'm gonna have to
look that up. Yeah. The 11th, that's my birthday weekend, Sue. We're not going to acknowledge this one if you can remember, but I think Easter is the week after. That's really, really
late.
April
20th.
There you go. Have a great night, Sue Thomas.
You too.
Have a great night to all of you. We'll talk tomorrow at 3 during the roundtable at the Fish Fry.
Get more at 971talk.com.